Well, hey there, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. My name's Robert Winters, and today is January 20th, 2026. I have to keep reminding myself to do 26 rather than 25, especially when I write checks. A few things to talk about today. One of the things, I mean, this is called Cambridge Inside Out, and it's usually inside Cambridge, talking about local affairs, things going on in City Hall, in and around the city of Cambridge. But this is actually the 1 year anniversary of the Trump presidency, and I thought, well, since it does actually have some effects that we feel here locally, I thought maybe it would be a good idea to actually mention some of that as well. Without further ado, let me do a little bit of that. I'm generally of the mind that you sit it out, you wait out unpleasant things. Eventually they come to an end. I'm not saying absolutely everything about the Trump presidency is horrible, but the thing is, a lot of them are pretty horrible. But in 2016, when he was elected, I said, "All right, well, I'll just wait it out." And I took care of a lot of things around my house, rewired the building, did a lot of things, made very productive use of the years. And then it was over, right? But now it's returned. So, anyway, like many other people, since I guess today is January 20th, is typically the day when we do inauguration, or we might even be seeing one of these State of the Union addresses, which I never watch ever, no matter who's president, because it's just political advertisement, really. It is 1 year in, and maybe it's an appropriate time just to say a few quick things. One thing I want to say here is that I don't know exactly how to say this exactly right here, but one of the things that I don't like about Cambridge, but maybe this is true of any place else, is the way people will try to marginalize others if they have anything other than the doctrine, the clear, like, for example, in Cambridge, if you say, well, here's one thing in the Trump presidency that I thought was good, people will just immediately say, oh, you're a Trumper, and you go, no. I mean, I remember years ago, the way we used to marginalize people, we would say, let's see, here's a short list of popular ways to marginalize people in Cambridge. One is, oh, he's a trust fund baby, right? So he's living off a trust. Therefore, you shouldn't really pay attention to this person's opinion, because after all, they've got an easy life. They're just all funded. They never had to work for a living, et cetera. I mean, I'm even guilty of taking a whack at people on that one myself. The other one was, well, he must be off his meds. Let's marginalize people by suggesting that somehow they're psychologically unfit, et cetera. But I've certainly witnessed in over the last year, and certainly during the Trump presidency, when somebody when you expressed a point of view that was even just a little bit different than the doctrine, you were called a Trumper, or worse, So anyway, it's not my job to do any of that. If anything, I'm just here to sort of be as objective as I can on the pros and cons of the Trump presidency, most of which I don't like at all. I mean, I'll be really clear about that. I'm gonna do a little bouncing back and forth here, with off the website here a little bit here. But the first thing that I think needs to be stated is the almost comic book nature in which Mr. Trump made appointments to the various federal agencies, the cabinet, the federal cabinet. I mean, and I can again, I don't think they're all horrible. There's some ideas that they're sort of out of the news. Maybe they're doing a good job. I don't know what's the Department of Commerce doing. I really have no idea. I'm sure there's some things. My opinion is Marco Rubio as Secretary of State, I actually think he's done a pretty decent job under trying circumstances. I mean, I kind of feel sorry for somebody who has to sort of sit there and listen to bullshit from the president of the United States, when you still want to somehow do good things, and I think he's a reasonably honorable guy who does want to do good things, but so I'll grant Trump that that was a decent appointment, I would say. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth. I mean, this guy's absolute comic book stuff, you know. And I'm not just talking about the tattoos, you know, like he's a superhero or something like that. It's just like, you know, the notion that you would actually take somebody from, you know, who was just doing a talk show, and just sort of make them Secretary of, not only Secretary of Defense, now it's Secretary of War, right? Where you give them the ultimate power over the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the ability to, for, you know, subject to the president's desires, of course, but, you know, to actually go to war, engage and kill people. You know, honestly, some of the activities of, without any due process at all, of just blowing up boats because you think they might be carting drugs off the coast of Venezuela, that was pretty despicable, I thought. You know, and even the, honestly, the term war on drugs somehow suggests it's a war. It's a problem. It's not a war. And you sh sh and war powers should not be applicable to certain circumstances like that. Attorney General Pam Bondi. Okay, now this is, well, first let me just say that in my opinion, and again, call me a Trumper if you wish, but I think the Department of Justice actually targeted Trump, you know, maybe for good reason, but you know, the notion that they kind of had it in for the guy, I think that's relatively clear that that was true. But Trump's response to basically weaponize the entire Department of Justice to turn it into an agency of vengeance against political foes is really off the charts. I mean, I'd have to sort of go back and or talk to some American historians going back a couple of centuries to see if there's any real precedent for this level of adolescent vengeance that's being carried out. You know, and it's in real time. I mean, a very unfortunate incident happened in Minnesota recently with a death of a woman, and immediately it turned into, let's just prosecute the wife of this person who was killed. It's like, are you kidding me? You know, or at least let's investigate it. Let's run an investigation. And it's like, this is terrible. This is absolutely terrible. You know, so it's like we're 1 year in, three to go. You know, and I just hope it at least stabilizes at least a little bit so we don't have even weirder things happening over time. And again, I'm not going to go into all of the cabinet positions here, certainly in, not on a program that's really about Cambridge primarily. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as Secretary of Health and Human Services. I mean, yeah, let's make America healthy again. I appreciate the sentiment. I think it's wonderful. But really, you know, taking your own personal beliefs about vaccines, et cetera, and then just using that to just dictate federal policy, I just don't get that. That to me is just ridiculous. Vince McMahon of, you know, wrestling fame, his the Mrs. Linda McMahon is now Secretary of Education. Now, on this one here, let me just say that I've never quite understood what the role of the Department of Education really is. So if it were to kind of go away or get folded into like the way it used to be with the HEW, Health, Education, and Welfare, you know, I don't know, maybe that wouldn't be a horrible thing. But still, the notion that you basically take somebody who is completely like a fish out of water here and just put that person in charge of an agency, and then have that person's very, very first mandate is we will destroy this agency, which is effectively what was ha is happening. So now, Director of Homeland Security. I mean, I still have some questions about this whole concept of Homeland Security as a department. That's something that happened after the World Trade Center attacks. You know, where they needed to sort of coordinate all the various federal agencies. I guess there's some. That makes some sense, but you know, this notion that you sort of have, it's like the chief of the Gestapo in there who's basically carrying out things, and that this should be Kristi Noem, who is honestly, I think she operates the entire department like it was a talk show. Let me say something controversial. Let me do something controversial because we're going to get a lot of hits, or we're going to, play to our audience, Homeland Security is kind of a serious business, and I just don't think it should be run like a talk show, But that's, in my opinion, that's exactly what we have for this. So, anyway, I don't want to obsess about all of this, but I think it was worth mentioning, really, right up the top here, that the very first mistake I think of the Trump presidency is just the way these federal agencies were reconstituted for this administration. I think it's been ridiculous. So now, again, I'm not going to want to go all federal national here on Cambridge Inside Out, right? But some of these things really do kind of trickle down, or not just trickle down, but pour down on places like Cambridge. Immigration enforcement actions. I mean, if you're a coastal city like this, or actually not a coastal city, I mean, look at Minneapolis. There are a lot of people who are coming in from overseas. And sure, many have overstayed their visas, and there have been crimes committed. I think anybody who says that they're shocked by all of this, I think maybe ought to at least think about it a little bit, because after all, Mr. Trump was elected with the promise that he was going to come down hard on immigration, and he's doing that. So is anybody actually surprised? I know, and there is kind of an issue here, which is that, just like if just like those of us who were horrified by the January 6th attacks on the Capitol to trying to overturn the results of the 2020 election, at some point you have to, even if begrudgingly, respect the will of the voters. So the voters elected Trump. They did it with a full understanding that there was going to be much, relatively harsh immigration enforcement policies. So, if you kind of believe in the system and in the Constitution, you have to accept the fact that some of this is happening. And I do. I do. But the randomness is what bothers me. The notion that we're going to just, we don't like the governor of a state, so we're going to really come down really hard on there just to send a message, or really, and the tactics as well. To me, if I still think you should have warrants when you're going to arrest somebody, even if it's from immigration, for immigration purposes. And if you said it was because it was all these big bad drug dealers and rapists and killers and murderers or whatever, then fine, go after them, but there's so many people who are basically, their principal crime is they stayed too long. So, give them a little due process, don't just throw them on an airplane and send them to, some foreign prison or something like that. I think that's just been ridiculous. Now, Cambridge, I've never believed in this concept of sanctuary cities. Call me a Trumper for doing so. I just think that's just like showmanship. But Cambridge is one of these, call it a welcoming city, sanctuary city, whatever. And the notion that the President of the United States would just say, well, we're going to just cut off all funds for all things, or as much as we can possibly cut off, simply because you made a declaration that you're a sanctuary city. Even if the specifics of being a sanctuary city, like in Cambridge, are, if you actually read them, they say you do not obstruct federal immigration officials. You don't necessarily cooperate with them unless there's actually a public safety concern, in which case it's totally reasonable. Honestly, if you really read the sanctuary city details for Cambridge, they're relatively benign. I mean, I know some of the councillors this last a few months ago tried to stiffen them up to sort of, get a little more arbitrary, but they're, for the most part, they're actually not that onerous. But we're getting affected. We have I mean, Kendall Square has a lot of research. So what, research funding is going to get cut off? We have two of the most significant universities in the country. A lot of research money is being cut off. Many of the people who would come here as postdocs, sorry, stay home, don't come here. And this is having trickle down effects in Cambridge, so it's not, yes, this is a federal matter, but it affects us here, in good and I don't know, maybe interesting ways too. I mean, the thing is that if you have fewer people coming here fighting over the housing stock, and maybe some of the housing units open up or something, right? But point is, it's not so much whether it's all good or bad. It's just that it is definitely affecting us. This whole business about tariffs, I'm sorry, I'm not going to say too much about this, but I'm basically a free trade kind of guy. I was all with Bill Clinton on this. Again, I acknowledge the Ross Perot point of view that you're about the giant sucking sound about American jobs being sent overseas, but ultimately, or down to Mexico or into Canada or whatever. But ultimately, if you let it play out, free trade still ends up being the better policy all around, and it actually promotes peace between countries when they are economically independent. So when you start going around just rattling sabers and threatening tariffs, you're not helping. So that's just sort of ridiculous. Let's not even get into the crap about Greenland, okay? I mean, why? Why are we doing this? I mean, other than the fact that Mr. Trump feels he has to be at the top of the news cycle every single day of every week of every year, et cetera. I mean, it's like he can't stand not being at the top of the news cycle. And talk about adolescent behavior. I'm mad because they didn't give me the Nobel Peace Prize. Really? Come on. I wish we could be a little bit more consistent about Ukraine. I think Ukraine is that I think it's a good thing that we partner with Ukraine. I do agree with Mr. Trump that maybe some of the European countries should also be coughing up some more cash to, helping the effort, because the United States can't be entirely the quote policeman of the world unquote forever. But still, I just think we need a lot more consistency about that. People will hate me for saying so, but I actually agreed with the blowing up of the nuclear facilities in Iran. I thought that was a very good move. Congratulations, whoever was involved in that. But ultimately, before moving on to other topics here, I just want to say that, I'm an American, really true blue American. I'm proud to be an American. I'm going to enjoy celebrating the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. But I do not like the fact that the standing of the United States is being harmed by the fact that we have a president that makes us look like fools, and or as as aggressors, and for no reason, So ultimately, I think I know this sounds perhaps petty, but it's the fact that it makes us look bad that bothers me probably more than most of the specifics of what goes on. So anyway, maybe that's enough on this national news here, right? But I figured every once in a while, maybe you'll have to just permit me to do that. All right. I did want to say a thing or two, though, about a couple of things that I went to recently that I think are interesting and noteworthy. All right. The first, if I may wander over here and do this, was actually a meeting up at the Cambridge Public Library a few days ago that was on about the a bit of the history and an introduction to the Cambridge League of Women Voters. Now, first, let's be clear. Cambridge League of Women Voters hasn't actually been around for a while. But what happened is just a few years ago, some people here said, well, why, who came from other states, one person from Texas in particular said, why isn't there a Cambridge League of Women Voters? And they used to be, and it used to be very, very active. So they've actually created something called and actually I'm going to just pop out of this here for a moment, just speak of it. So they basically partnered up with the Boston League of Women Voters, and they created something that's called the Boston League of Women Voters Cambridge Unit. Sounds a little funny, right? But and it's a good effort, I think, to revive what was a really a great tradition. And I found myself very interested, and I was reading up some of the history on this here, you know. So, like, I learned just very recently that Cambridge League of Women Voters actually started out as something called the Cambridge Political Equality Association in 1896, right? With the goal of it was to extend study and discussion with a view towards securing political equality for American citizens. Now, of course, at the time, that would have included minority people who were, even with emancipation and supposedly the right to vote, were still largely disenfranchised, and certainly women's suffrage. It's actually an interesting fact, though, which I will not get into here, that during the early 1900s, it was the no-nos, the people who were opposed to women's suffrage. And I think the people with the legal, the what was to become the League of Women Voters were pretty bothered by the fact that even in Cambridge, the vote went against it. So, you know, kind of an interesting piece of history. So what happened was, and this is really what I kind of found interesting and kind of new. Maybe I should have understood this all along. It's that one of the original motives for the what was then the Cambridge Political Equality Association was to advocate for proportional representation. Now, this is back in the late 1800s. You know, we eventually adopted the Plan E Charter in 1940. You know, and the Committee for Plan E was dated began in 1938. All right, but in fact, nearly 40 years earlier, there was the group who was advocating for proportional representation. Was the Cambridge Political Equality Association, which was affiliated with the Massachusetts Women's Suffrage Association. And then eventually, by around 1920, it transitioned into the Cambridge League of Women Voters. One of the things that I guess I should have understood all along, because I knew a few people who had been affiliated with the Cambridge League of Women Voters, you know, which basically has been gone for 30 more years now. Beryl Brenny, who was one of the people I know, used to always talk about it. But I think what probably happened was that the older people died out, is that eventually they just didn't have the girl power. Though let's be clear, the League of Women Voters is not all women. In fact, I'm strongly considering becoming a member and making some donations to them because I think I like what they're about. They did actually play a little bit of a role, the Cambridge unit for the newly found Cambridge unit, when they hosted a candidate forum for the school committee candidates in this past election cycle. So thank you. Actually, I've heard from a number of people that this was actually the best of them, and I haven't I wasn't there. I was teaching a class at the time. But I'm willing to take that on faith that it probably was. You know, sometimes we have candidate events for both city council and school committee that tend to be hosted more often than not by partisan groups. It's kind of a nice thing when you can have a nonpartisan, a legitimately nonpartisan group that seriously takes that seriously, as the one who moderates various candidate forums. There are some Cambridge neighborhood associations who I think act like the Porter Square Neighbors Association, who are pretty, they've pretty been very successful, I think, at being neutral in the way they conduct candidate forums. But for the most part, speaking both as an observer and as a candidate, for the most part, it's like going into the lion's den. You know, you sort of you go in there knowing that they, you know, what the particular group wants to hear, the way they do question selection is all extremely biased. It's not a good system. Somebody actually also pointed out that once upon a time, presidential debates, United States presidential debates, were moderated by the League of Women Voters. All right. So I think this is a tradition that really, really needs to be increased. You know, and as the curator of the Cambridge Candidate Pages, I'm kind of thrilled to know that the League of Women Voters is basically trying to do sort of an election information service nationally. You know, it's actually something called Vote 411. If you do vote411.org, you know, and you just punch in your address, it'll actually bring things up. Now, It's probably still a bit of a work in progress, right? But I think the intention here is very good. And I'm really, really happy to see it happening. Okay. So, anyway, so that was one event that for me was really kind of great, actually. All right. There's one other thing I think I'd like to just mention here, which was another event that I went to just a few days ago. I have a strong interest in the local press, local journalism. I mean, I do Cambridge Civic Journal, which isn't really journalism in a classic sense. I'm not, writing up and posting stories about, everything that's happening everywhere. But I do believe it's important, and I bemoan the disappearance of the Cambridge Chronicle. But this was down at there's something that happens on Thursdays called Venture Cafe at the Cambridge Innovation Center, which was really started by Tim Rowe. So I said, well, let me go down there because they had a topic which had to do with local journalism. So I went there, and who should I run into but Sam Seidel, former city councilor, who was talking with Tim Rowe, who I've known for a while, and one of the featured people. The two featured speakers at an event were Michael Fitzgerald, who's now the editor in, I think it's called editor in chief with Cambridge Day, and Tim Rowe was the other person, and they were basically talking about local journalism, and it was actually pretty delightful. I mean, I got sort of like the shout out to me because I've been doing what I do, however you want to define what I do, since 1997, I think pretty much longer than anyone else in the universe. So it turned into a rather interesting conversation with a lot of people. A lot of them were like, techie people from Kendall Square, and whatnot. But it was actually pretty great, and enjoyed it. Did not, unfortunately, partake of the free alcohol, which would have been nice, but I got there and didn't want to wait on the line. So anyway, it was a good time, and it's something that it's on my mind a lot. And I think it should be on a lot of people's minds, which is how do we revive local journalism, not just in Cambridge, but in Somerville, Lynn, Dorchester, Boston, whatever, as when these major newspaper chains are gobbling assets up and destroying them, which is essentially what Gannett has done with the Cambridge Chronicle. Though I still hold ho hope against all odds that one day Cambridge Chronicle will come back. Say something about that too, which is that when I was looking up some of the information about the League of Women Voters, which has become a real curiosity for me right now, where did I find most of the information? I was digging through the digital archives from the Cambridge Chronicle over the many years, and it's very good. You can do a search and you can pull stuff out there. And I found the level of detail of like every single week that was going on in the Cambridge Chronicle in detailing. People, moving, people who've passed away, actually really doing serious write-ups about these things. Nobody's doing that anymore. And I really feel bad for the people 50 years from now who may be looking back at this dark period of Cambridge history and saying, we don't know what the hell is going on there because there was no proper paper of record, So I would love to see us revive that. So anyway, I think we'll leave that topic right there. So let me just pause for a moment.